What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Real Bodybuilding Podcast. This is episode number 109, and I'm here with Mr. Zach Merkel. How are you, man?
What's going on, Fuad? Great to finally be on.
How are you, sir? I've been keeping an eye on you through Instagram and checking out your posts here and there, and lately you've been looking like a freak. So I thought I'd have you on and kind of introduce you to the bodybuilding world and let them know someone's coming.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Kind of just been working hard in silence, you know. That's always been my thing. When I turned pro at USA's, you know, I kept that prep under wraps, and I released like one photo like 3 weeks out, you know, just to let everyone know I was jumping in. And you know, it's been 2 years since I competed, and it's finally time to get back up there. So Chicago's the move. I actually have been dieting for like well over 20 weeks. I wanted to do Indy, didn't feel quite ready. Thought maybe Cali was the next, didn't feel quite ready, but I think I'm going to nail it for Chicago. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, you kind of showed up out of nowhere at the USA's because I think a lot of people had Nick Walker winning that show. And then you showed up and kind of upset everybody.
Yeah, the hype was definitely surrounding Nick.
You beat Nick, and Vincenzo was at that show too, right?
Yeah, Vince, he was in the top five. Brandon Barrows, I believe, got third. Yeah, my memory's a little foggy, but it was a good top five in that super heavy class. Yeah, it was a good show.
Did you know, and I'm not trying to start any kind of rivalry or anything, but did you know, like, were you kind of chasing Nick? You knew the hype was behind him, and you wanted to kind of like make sure you showed up and took over?
That's a good question. You know, you can't ignore like the guys around you that are getting notoriety and getting attention. So, I mean, that's always in the back of your mind, but you know, bodybuilding for me has always been an endeavor of personal improvement. So I'm happy as long as I beat my previous look. And I knew, you know, I was going to be at my all-time best size-wise, conditioning-wise, you know, development-wise. So, you know, it's the same mentality with every show I do. You just go into it and, you know, you treat every show, you know, with the utmost importance, and you just hope for the best. And that's what I did. And it was a overall victory, you know.
Yeah, you sound like you're not a fan of social media, or not. I shouldn't say a fan, but you sound like it's not your main objective. Like your thing is actually in the gym.
Yeah, that's true. I love the training. I love the lifestyle. I'm a diehard, you know, bodybuilder. And the social media, you know, thing is, I don't know. Do I want to call it like a necessary evil? It's not really like an evil, but
yeah, it can be.
It can be a great thing, you know, to get yourself out there and market yourself. You know, I'm trying to use it now to garner some more online clients because I just really enjoy, you know, helping others and, you know, especially younger guys. That's kind of like my niche is, younger, you know, not just amateur bodybuilders, but lifestyle clients and stuff. And, you know, just because I've been there, and I wish when I started, I had someone showing me all the proper ways. You know, I made every mistake you can make in bodybuilding.
Tell me, how old were you when you started bodybuilding?
I did my first show when I was 20, 28 now. But, you know, I've been training more or less like a bodybuilder since I was like a young teenager, like in high school. You know, I was never one to really chase like bench PRs like everyone else. Like I've always like isolated muscles, and I feel like that kind of helped catapult me into, you know, having success as like a young bodybuilder, because a lot of guys are like crossover, you know, they start in powerlifting, they start in, you know, like football lifting or whatever. And I was always kind of just like, I want to train like a bodybuilder, you know?
Yeah. So what, What were some of the mistakes you made? You talk about making mistakes. Can you pick out a couple glaring ones that you know were
nothing big? In particular? It's just a funny one I always laugh at is like I used to think in order to get shredded, you could eat as much clean food as you wanted to eat. So my first diet, I started out on 500 or 550 grams of protein. It was pound of meat per meal and a ton of rice. And I was like, what the hell? I'm not losing any weight. I'm not getting any leaner. I'm eating clean. I didn't have any cheat meals, dumb stuff that you learn, I need to be in a deficit and just basic. But, you pick up from guys in the gym that have, done it. And, you pick and choose, you got to be careful what forums you read from and stuff, but, you just pull from different resources and eventually you find your way and you learn your body and, then you really get good.
So how big were you? So you didn't play any high school sports or anything, nothing led you to bodybuilding?
No, I did. I played baseball in high school. I was on the baseball team. Ironically enough, I was on the golf team too. The furthest thing from strength related stuff.
Yeah.
So that was part of what really drove me to be a bodybuilder was I knew I wasn't good enough to play, these sports beyond high school and go to the next level. I just being realistic.
Yeah.
And I wanted to find something I was good at that I could still be competitive in. And, I went to college and I was like, okay, everyone else is drinking, partying, and, there's all these distractions, but I just want to focus on the gym and my diet. And that's when, I had always lifted, pretty seriously. And, that's when I really started, tying together the diet and, my body started to really respond. And I was like, I could be good at this bodybuilding thing. So I did my first local show when I was 20. I won the overall there. Gary Udit was there and he was like, dude, you're already ready for nationals. And
wow.
I was like, well, wow, and then the rest is history. And ever since that point, I've done one show per year.
Yeah.
Up until last year, I took last year off because of COVID and I had, some health issues and stuff too. Not health issues, but I had cardiac, heart type. It was an issue that was there from birth. So I needed some cardiac ablations done. I'm good now. I feel great. But I always thought that doing one show per year in my early years was a good gauge of how much improvement I can make over the course of the year. Cause you get a solid 8 to 9 month off season or growth phase, if you will. And then you diet down and you kind of see what you put on and what was underneath. And I've always made, steady progress. I didn't have any one year where it was wow, I blew up.
That's kind of the way I did it. I did one show. I actually started the same time you did. I was 20 years old when I started.
Yeah.
And I did one show a year until I was 27, pretty much. And then I turned pro at 27. So similar.
What show did you turn pro at again?
I won the Canadian Nationals.
Canadian Nationals. Yeah. You went overall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a similar timeline to yours. But what, can you still swing a golf club?
I can. It's not pretty, but I'll go to Top Golf and hit some balls or whatever. And
can you still drive it? How far can you still drive a ball?
Oh, I don't know. I could, if I hit it straight, I could probably whack a ball 250 yards or something. Yeah, but obviously the shoulder and the pec interference is it's fun though. I still like to get out and do stuff like that. I think it's important to, as a bodybuilder, it's kind of it's your life, but I like to get out and hit some golf balls, go bowling, just do different stuff. Yeah.
I want to show people kind of what we're talking about, why I'm laughing that you're still trying to hit golf balls, because it's ridiculous how big you are. for those of you who don't follow Zach, this is Zach Merkel's Instagram page, Merk Diesel. For those of you listening on audio, it's Merk Diesel. So M-E-R-K Diesel, all one word. Check him out on Instagram. So the first photo I go to, this is you how many days ago?
Oh, that was like, what, a week or two ago?
It says June 2nd. So
yeah.
Yeah. So this is a little over almost 2 weeks ago. And you're how heavy here? 275, 280?
Yeah, I was like 279 or 278 or something there. I'm a couple pounds down since that photo. I weighed in at like 275 this morning.
You know, that's crazy, right? Like, how tall are you? How tall are you?
I call myself 6 foot.
Yeah. What does that mean? You're 5'11"?
Yeah, it means I'm like 5'11 and a half.
Okay. So how tall was Dennis Wolf? Do you know?
I feel like when you look up bodybuilder heights on Google and stuff, you get all kinds of results. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why there's such a discrepancy. I think like bodybuilders lie about their height. That's why I don't know how tall Dennis Wolf is. He's got to be like what, 6'6"?
I think he's like, I thought he was like 6'1" or something like that. I'm just, the only reason I'm making the comparison is because you're another tall bodybuilder, like in the same, I mean, you don't really have the same muscle bellies. You have a different physique altogether, but just another taller bodybuilder that's big with great proportions. I mean,
yeah, thanks, man.
Everything looks like it fits really well together, and you know, you're not lacking anywhere. So, I mean, it's going to be an exciting show. So this is what you're bringing to you. This is your first pro show. What year did you turn pro? 2 years ago?
Yeah. 2019 USAs.
So why the break, for 2 years?
Right. So, like I kind of lightly touched on, I knew after I turned pro at USAs, well, I was in shape, right? And a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, you should go do Tampa and this and that. You're already in shape. Go see how you do. Cash in. I just wanted to enjoy the victory for a while.
Okay.
And kind of rebound and just, you know, do what I've always done, you know, like do a show and then pack it up for the year. And I know, you know, that's a little different now and it changes when you turn pro, but I really just wanted to enjoy that victory. And, you know, I wanted to do a show in 2020, but around Christmas time of 2019, I started getting these symptoms, right? I was getting like a racing heart rate, dizzy in the gym. So it turns out I was having cardiac arrhythmias, yeah. Right? And, you know, I all I knew was I felt really off, you know, just dizzy, nauseous. My heart would start pounding out of nowhere. It started in the gym, like during sets, and it progressed to the point to where I would just be sitting at home and I would start, like, you know, it would jump on me. So I finally decided to go to urgent care. They thought I had a blood clot in my lung, so they sent me to the hospital. You know, so I went to the ER, I, you know, got in the hospital, you know, they admitted me, I got in a room, kept me overnight. And then the next morning, you know, I'm all hooked up, you know, to the monitors and everything. And out of nowhere, my heart rate jumps from like a normal, well, it was already elevated. It was like 90s or so. Mm-hmm. It jumps to 260 beats per minute. So alarms go off, like the nurses rush into the room. You know, they put the defibrillator pads on me and they're ready to, you know, do cardioversion to shock me out of it.
Yeah.
They shot me up with something. So luckily, you know, it calmed down. Anyways, I had to be life flighted. I lived in Newcastle at the time. I live in Pittsburgh now, but I had to be life flighted to, you know, UPMC Presby, which is like one of the main hospitals in Pittsburgh. Turns out I had a WPW, which is Wolf Parkinson White syndrome, okay. Which is like an extra nerve pathway in your heart. And, you know, if you think of your heart rate as like riding a circle, yes. It's a short circuit. And once it jumps on that shorter circuit, it goes extremely fast. Okay. And I actually had another similar condition that was called AVNRT. It's AV nodal reentrant tachycardia. So I had another similar nerve defect, and I had both going on at once, and they'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So I had to have two cardiac ablations done. I actually
went in
procedures. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. What's an ablation? What does that mean? What do they do?
Okay. So they go in with they went in through my groin with a catheter, and they run it up into your heart, and they heat the tip of that catheter on the nerve.
Yeah.
And kill that nerve, essentially, that nerve. So then,
functions properly.
Yeah. So then when that electrical circuit, you know, comes to that split, it doesn't ride, that nerve's now dead. So it rides the normal circuit. Anyways, the procedure was just supposed to be a standard 2 or 3 hour long procedure. It turns out, like, I'm such a heavy guy, you know, I was 290 pounds, when I went under, and they also found out, you know, that I had like sleep apnea and all this stuff. And now I wear a CPAP at night and whatever. But that's besides the point. My lung, I got a pulmonary edema. Like, so they couldn't keep this fluid out of my lungs. So they actually had to put me on a ventilator. So I was unconscious for like 3 days, you know, tube down my throat, hooked up to all these wires. And I remember going into the EP lab on Wednesday, and I woke up. When they woke me up, I thought it was like Wednesday night. It was Saturday. So
oh my God.
I was out for like 3 days. And the first thing I remember was they're pulling this tube out of my throat. I'm puking all over myself, like all this fluid's coming out. Yeah. And I was just like gripping the sides of the bed because I couldn't breathe. I didn't know if I was dying or like, what was going on. It was the scariest moment of my life, hands down. And you know, then everything calmed down and they explained to me what happened and that, you know, I should be fine, you know, recovering. And I was you know, released from the hospital that Monday. I had to take a couple weeks off the gym and slowly wean back. And they told me your heart is, you know, going through a procedure like that, it's a lot of irritation on your heart. So I would be training and I would still get like these glimpses of like these borderline arrhythmias. They were more like murmurs or like skipped heartbeats.
Yeah.
And I dealt with that for months and months. And I was like, man, am I ever going to go back to normal? Like, this is foreign to me. You know, I've never felt any sensations like this. So it was really scary, but over time it subsided and I got more comfortable with training and pushing myself in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was scary to, like, you know, train, you know, failure.
I was just going to ask you, so this happened last year this happened?
This happened between Christmas of 2019 and like January of 2020 was when everything went down, you know, with the hospital and such.
So you were in the hospital for a few days. You went through all this. They told you everything that was wrong, and forgive me if I ask this in an odd way, but your main inclination was to get back to the gym. And I'm like, aren't you scared at all that, like, did anybody say to you, hey, maybe you need to take some time off, maybe you need to downsize, maybe bodybuilding is not right for you? Like, is any of that enter your mind, or are you like, I'm fine now, I'm going back to work?
There was a lot going through my mind, but, you know, I was hearing from people, hey, maybe bodybuilding, maybe it's not in the cards, maybe it's not for you, you know, maybe, like, having gone through that, maintaining your size isn't the smartest thing. But my cardiologist, luckily, she's wonderful, and she kind of, you know, laid it out for me in well, you know, as bodybuilders, we're stubborn and, like, we don't like to hear what the doctors have to say. And we're like, oh, that that's not going to happen to me. That doesn't apply to me. You know, we think we're invincible or whatever. But, you know, I trust her. And, you know, she genuinely said, you shouldn't have an issue continuing your bodybuilding. And that was the best news I've ever heard, you know, because I bawled my eyes out in the hospital. You know, I'm not going to lie. It was really emotional because I didn't know what to expect. So
did you think at that time, because I think I've been where you are to a certain degree. Do you think, were you thinking at that time, I'm going to have to stop everything I was doing and everything I worked for? Is that part of the reason you were crying?
Yeah, I was really worried about that. I mean, one, I was lucky to be alive. Like, I don't want to, I don't want to neglect to, you know, be appreciative of that. But, as bodybuilders, you know, we really, you know, the serious ones, we pour our heart and soul into it. And, you know, we don't know anything else. So, there was a lot of uncertainty just going through my mind and, getting, you know, mixed feedback from, you know, the people in my circle and the people around me. But, you know, I was like, you know what, let's just treat it like anything else one day at a time. Let's be optimistic because, you know, your mood and your mentality can dictate a lot, you know, and it corresponds to your body. And, I was just thankful, you know, that it could have gone so many different ways. And most of them would have been, you know, I think it went like the best way it could have possibly gone, you know, this condition, or these conditions I had, the WPW especially affects, younger people. It's one of the rare, you know, cardiac issues that, when you have it, most people know by the time they're like 25 or 30 or so. And, these young kids, like 5, 6, 7, 10 years old, they'll just drop dead randomly. And, you know, people won't know why. And, it happened to my, I think it was, my cousin, her friend's daughter. She had WPW and she was like 10 years old at her dance recital or, choir recital or whatever. She's up on stage with, her class or, you know, this group of kids and singing, you know, dancing, whatever. And then she just drops and that's it right there. Yeah. She's dead, you know? So I was really lucky. I think, training and, being in the shape that I was in actually really helped me, survive, you know, the, how intense, you know, the
initial part of it.
Yeah. The arrhythmias and the initial, you know, shock of everything. So,
Well, I'm kind of like you in that way. Like I do listen to my doctor as well. And, you know, I have my own health issues going on and my doctor's like, you're good. Just keep doing what you want to do. As soon as you're not good, I'll tell you you're not good. So is your relationship with your cardiologist kind of similar where she's like, I'll tell you if you need to take a break or I'll tell you if you need to stop?
I think it's kind of understood between us. She's never steered me wrong, you know, and I've had a cardiologist prior to her that has told me you're not going to make it past 25, like, and that was based off of nothing, you know. It was like standard checkups and just that typical, like, you're a gear using athlete, like you shouldn't be doing that, like shame on you, this is what's going to happen to you, like that kind of fear factor, you know. And I hate that, you know. I don't know, but I'm in good hands now. So
good. So, okay. You are 20. How many shows did you do between, you did a show every year. Did you win every show between the time you started and the time you did the nationals? Were they all, or how many losses did you take in that time?
Oh yeah. Plenty of losses. So, I did my first one when I was 20, that was just a small local show. It wasn't even like an NPC show. It was recognized by the NPC. Yeah. It was just a small college show. The second show I did,
did you win the first one?
Yeah, the overall, the heavyweight and the overall. Yeah.
Second one?
Second show I did Collegiate Nationals, and I took second place in the heavyweights to Cody Montgomery that year. He won the teen and collegiate nationals. The next year, I decided to try North Americans. I was 22. That was 2015. I believe Russ Allen won the super heavies that year. I took eighth place. It was a really strong lineup. There was like 32 guys in the supers.
How does eighth place affect you when you've already taken a first and a second, and then you walk up and you take eighth? Are you seriously affected, or are you like, this is the big leagues and it's okay?
You know what? I was okay with it because it's a whole new level, and it was such a deep lineup. I kind of justified it like, well, I was in the top third, like top quarter of the total number of guys, and most of these guys have been doing it for years, you know, like the average age was, you know, probably 30 some or whatever for these guys. And there were all kinds of names that are, you know, big now in that lineup. So I wasn't too bummed about it. I was just, you know, I was happy again to bring my best, and I had a lot of fun at that show. And
so you just got back to work. What was after that?
That said, after that first North American experience in 2016, I decided, okay, I'm going to dial it back a little bit, choose a show that's challenging, but, you know, realistically enough for me to win. So I decided to do the Mr. Pittsburgh contest, you know, which is a stone's throw away from where I lived. You know, I was lucky enough to live in the Pittsburgh area, which is a pretty solid hub, you know, for bodybuilding. You got the Mannions and Udit and all these big shows here. So I won the closed overall Pittsburgh. So I won the title of Mr. Pittsburgh, and I lost in the open heavyweights. Yeah, because they didn't have supers at that show. It was like 200 whatever and up was just heavyweight. They didn't have super. I lost to Seth Shaw.
Okay.
He won that class, and he lost the overall to like the light heavy or something. So I did well. It was a good outing for me. I was happy to have that title. Mm-hmm. And then ironically enough, the next year, 2017, I went back to North Americans and I took second place there, and I lost to Seth Shaw again. He did that show. And he won the overall, and he won his prep card.
Yeah.
It was all good because I was like, okay, I'm right there. Like, I know I can do this. I know I can turn pro. 2018, I did North Americans again, you know, naturally. So it's local. I don't have to fly or travel anywhere crazy. It's kind of like a ready-made pro qualifier right in my backyard. Anyways, I took third in a tough lineup. Ron Gordon won the class, the supers. Cade Zook, my buddy Cade, he looked phenomenal. He took second. So Ron, he ended up winning the overall and the, I believe, Masters 35 and over as well. That prep, I wasn't, for whatever reason, I wasn't quite conditioned enough. I put on a lot of size between the previous year and then. And it didn't help. I was a little under the weather. I got sick like a couple days prior to the show. And I mean, you know, that doesn't do anything good for you. You hold water, and I was sweaty on stage and my tan was streaking, and you know, so that was a botch.
What came after that one?
USA's.
That was the one.
Yeah. Yeah. 2019. I decided, you know, let's mix it up. Let's go to Vegas and compete. You know, see if that judging panel likes me any, and turn it into a little mini vacation in Vegas after the show. Why not? You know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And you know, the rest is history.
So you got the pro card. When did you sign on with Redcon?
Redcon picked me up. Let's see. USA's were end of July. That September.
So right after.
Yeah, essentially.
Can you explain to the young guys out there looking for sponsorships what that's like? Is it Did Redcon come knocking on your door? Did you go down knocking on their door? Like, how did the whole thing come about?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Actually, I have some really supportive parents when it comes to bodybuilding. My mom and dad are great. Yeah. My dad contacted Singerman on LinkedIn and said, hey, my son just won USA's. Could you take a look at him? You know,
wow.
He's not signed. You know, check him out. And then sure enough, they're like, yeah, you know, we'd be happy to have you. And yeah, that's how that went down. Cause you know, dude, me, I'm a pretty modest guy. I don't really put myself out there excessively. Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. Would you have ever gone knocking on their door? You yourself?
I don't know. Maybe at a certain point, like,
you might have tried.
It was in my mind. I was like, well, I did just win USA's, you know, that's not like a slouch achievement. So
no.
I was, you know, I was ready to maybe start sending out some emails, but it panned out. And, you know, Redcon's been really good to me. So yeah. I'm happy to be a part of the team. And actually, as soon as I got with them, MegaFit Meals contacted me. So I got with MegaFit. That one fell right into my lap. They sought me out. So, yeah. And then Sheik Sports.
I assume for those people listening that probably don't know how it works, I assume the other sponsors, once they knew you were sponsored by Redcon, probably were easier to pick up, because then they kind of know, okay, you're already with somebody, they're going to promote you. So the other sponsors are going to get help being like promoting their athlete as well, because Redcon's going to promote you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that seemed to be the case. Like you get that main one, and then like you said, like the cross promotion, it all kind of
becomes easier.
It all kind of, the momentum, you know, builds off of each other. So absolutely.
How many siblings do you have? Are you the only child, or do you have siblings?
No, I'm the oldest. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. My brother's 21 now. My sister's 19.
Were your mom and dad always, it's not very common for, it's funny because Nick Walker's parents are very supportive too, but aside from a couple people, parents are always either indifferent to it or they're against it. So have your parents always been on board from day one?
Yeah, they love it. Like, they're
really,
like full on. At the same time, there's no pressure or anything. They're just supportive in that they'll support me no matter what I do, whether I want to be Mr. Olympia or I could walk away tomorrow and say, you know, I'm just not feeling it anymore, and they'd be just as happy for me. So, you know, they're fantastic. And it's actually, you know, as I've competed and I've progressed, you know, they've learned more about it, and they actually get really excited, you know, about the sport. They're like, hey, Zach, did you see so-and-so? They're looking good. And my mom will actually critique me on like my progress photos and be like, hey, that, you know, that part of your rear double bicep looks a little thin there. Do you think you could like pack on some lower lats, or like, what's going on with your adductors? Why aren't they like detailing properly? And I'm like, you can't help but laugh, but it's great.
Do you ever tell your mom, you're like, I'm trying, man. I'm trying to do the things you're telling me. I'm trying, I swear.
Yeah, I'm doing everything I can. Believe me, I'm crossing my T's and dotting my I's here.
I think that's really cool though, man. It's because it's, that's a whole other level. Like, it's one thing for them to show up at the shows and like cheer you on and stuff, because like my family eventually got to that point, but it's a whole other level for them to be like critiquing your photos and fucking letting you know who else is coming. So Chicago is coming up, and that's you've decided that that's going to be your pro debut. Do your parents know who's competing?
They know more of the athletes that are in it than I do.
Do they send you photos of like Charles Griffin's come in and Brett Wilkins, and like, do they send you photos of these people or no?
Yeah, no, they don't send me photos, but like, I don't know. You, like, you know me, I just like, I'm like, I'm going to do this show and bring my best, and whatever happens, happens. And yeah, they're like, oh man, I think you can inch out so-and-so if you beat him in XYZ shots.
Yeah.
This guy's going to be tough, you know? But
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
So you don't, so, okay, honestly, like, you know, competitor, you don't, because I used to look around and, you know, every athlete's different. So I'll believe you, whatever you say. But when I used to compete, I used to look around and be like, okay, this guy's doing the show. Where do I think I fit? Okay, I think I can place here. Do you play that game with yourself, or you're like, I don't really give a shit. I'm not watching who's doing anything. I'm just focused on myself.
Both, if that's possible. Like,
yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, you can't really not think about it. Like, it's impossible to not, you know, kind of play out scenarios in your head of how it could go. Like, oh, if I'm on and he's off, then I'll beat him. You know, if I'm a little off and like these guys are on, they could creep up on me. But that's the beauty of bodybuilding shows is at the surface, you would think like the placings are set in stone. You know, it takes years to build the muscle. Like, how on earth could you beat this guy if he's already so far ahead of you? But the reality is, you know, as like a seasoned bodybuilder or like a devoted fan, you know that like this guy could be holding water. He could, you know, his night show look could, you know, worsen from prejudging, and like all kinds of things could happen. And that's why we show up and we compete to find out, you know, who rises above the pressure and who buckles and, you know, how the pieces fall. But yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait, to be honest.
You seem pretty methodical in your approach. Is there any major pressure on you because it's your first show, or have you kind of decided that it is what it is, and I'm just not gonna worry about that?
I'm not really feeling a great deal of pressure. I just, if anything, I you know, put the pressure on myself. I can't control what anyone else looks like. I can't control who shows up. So yeah, you know, I just treat it like anything else, and I just want to bring my best and control all the variables the best I can, and that's that, you know.
I want to get into a couple of the X's and O's because some people, I generally don't get into them, but I think some people like to hear some of this stuff. So what is, first of all, do you coach yourself or do you have a coach?
Oh no, I have a coach.
Who's your coach?
Morgan Rice.
Okay, not a big name.
You've never heard of him, huh?
No. Is he coach a lot of people?
No. It that's funny you mentioned, because me and him kind of came up together. I got with him for my second show back in 2014. I was like, I might have been his first client like ever. So, you know, it's kind of cool because I've improved as a bodybuilder and he's improved equally as much as a coach, and he's had like 7-8 years to learn my body. And, you know, we've, made mistakes together, you know, we've tried this and that, experimented. And, you know, I think we're finally to the point to where, you know, he knows my body and I know what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with. And, it just works. But, yeah, since then, in the past couple of years, he's picked up a couple, pro cards, you know, he's turned some people pro, and, he's done it all organically, you know, without, you know, like some of these coaches will grab a guy who's clearly on the verge of turning pro, and they'll just, you know, chalk that one up on their resume,
attach their name to him.
So, you know, Morgan has truly you know, built me and a couple other guys from the ground up, and I think there's something to be said about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really good story, man. You guys have been together from the beginning. It's interesting to me. It also goes a lot, like, it goes to your mindset as well. that you never decided to go with a bigger name guy? Because a lot of guys, what happens is they get to a certain level and then they're like, okay, and this happened to me, so I'm not talking about anybody specifically. It's happened to many people, but you get to a certain level and you're like, okay, well, I think since I'm at this level, I need to go with this level coach.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you, people start to jump. They're like, okay, well, this guy got me to the Nationals, but this guy will get me to the pros, and they kind of jump over to somebody new. So I think it says a lot that you kind of stuck with your coach and you guys have done it together.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, I've been offered free coaching from big name coaches numerous times. You know, I've turned all those offers down just because I don't know. I dig the loyalty, and he's my coach, and he's been a great friend to me, you know, through the years. And we just work well. You know, that wouldn't work well for a lot of people, like having your coach be one of your good friends. You know, a lot of people weren't that like truly objective, like coach. But I don't know. I think it's a good story too, and it just works. And we're still, you know, I haven't competed in 2 years, but we're still coming off of a victory. And, you know, I've put on a ton of size since then, and I'm dieting down well. So, you know, things have been great.
Yeah. You don't find it hard, like, because I agree with what you said. Like, some people find it's challenging to when they blur the line between coach and friend. Like, me and John Meadows started out as coach client, and we worked together for a few years. We became friends. It almost kind of blurred the line between like listening to this guy or listening to your friend. Cause you're like, is that my friend telling me what to do? Or is that my coach telling me what to do? You know what I mean? So you can split them up.
Yeah. Well, I feel like John, he probably kept it real with you, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's not going to give you a burger and fries just because you're hungry, you know.
No, John kept it real. He'd be like, you're if I wasn't focused, he'd be like, your shit's not focused, man. He would always tell me exactly what the truth was. But from a competitor's standpoint, I always feel like, and I think a lot of competitors feel this way, is like you want to impress your coach, and your coach is almost like on a pedestal.
Yeah,
whatever he says goes. And I feel like the pedestal is kind of gone after you become friends. Like, when you become friends, your friend's no longer on a pedestal. He's like right next to you. You know what I mean? So that was always my thing, is I liked having a coach that was like a mentor instead of my buddy.
Yeah.
So,
that's a great point. It's funny you mentioned that, because Morgan, he does not sugarcoat anything. I mean, he's told me numerous times, like, dude, you look like straight up dog shit right now. Like, you need to get your shit together.
Yeah.
And, you know, that resonates, and that's pushed me to be a better bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And he's like that with all his clients, you know, friends or not. It's check-ins are always a little intimidating, but I think you need that. And it keeps you focused, and it keeps you honest.
Yeah. Yeah. So how much size have you put on since, what were you on stage at the USA's?
USA's, I weighed in 259.
Okay. And now you're going to go on. I mean, fuck, those last pictures, you were 275. So you're going to go on 10 pounds heavier, at least, maybe more.
Yeah. I think I can be a fully shredded, like anywhere between 268 to 271, maybe fall somewhere in that range. I think, like, if I can get ready for Chicago a couple weeks early and kind of reverse into it and fill out a tad, that'll be perfect. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, conditioning is paramount, and that's the priority. I mean, everyone knows that, like, at any level in bodybuilding, if you try to strictly play the size game, it's not going to be the best result. So conditioning will be paramount, and whatever the weight is, it is, but I know I've put on quality tissue, and if I don't weigh like what I want to weigh, then I know I'll be even more shredded than I was at USA's anyway. So the body composition is going to be better.
Yeah, it's always hard to gauge. Like, it, I know I say, you know, 10 pounds, but even if you were 259 again, you're going to be a way better 259. It's not the same 250. So it's not, yeah, it's hard to gauge that way. I just, you know, that's it's just a question that you always wonder. Cause I was 255 for like the last 4 years of my career, between 255 and 260.
Yeah.
But
did your body composition change though?
Yeah,
did you
like,
see like
the progression? Like the 255, the 255 in 2014 was nothing like the 255 in 2015.
Yeah.
It's just a denser, thicker look, right? So I know that can change without necessarily the numbers being higher. But even if you did put on the 10 pounds and you were 265 to 270, some people might say, well, that's not a lot of weight to put on in 2 years. But when you're that heavy,
yeah,
putting on 10 more pounds of muscle, that's a lot of fucking muscle to put on at that when you're already at that level of size.
Yeah, so, that's a good point. And just like from a development standpoint, like filling in the gaps, the glaring gaps that really need filled in, like 2 pounds in the right spot can look like,
I know,
10 pounds, you know, like like the development is, I think at a certain point, it just takes precedence over everything else. Yeah.
So you're 28, 29 now.
28.
Yeah, so you got a lot of room to grow still. So what's the plan for this year? Is Chicago, and then actually before I get into the plans, going back to the size you put on, I just want to know a couple things. Do you do any cardio in the off season, or are you like a heavy bulker?
I like to say I do cardio, but sometimes I skip. Like, you know how it is. Like,
so you know the saying is the right thing to say, but you probably you probably barely did any.
Yeah, like it's like I'd love to say, oh, I did 4 30-minute sessions a week religiously, but that's just not the case. You know,
well, what's the actual number? Like once a week, maybe.
No, I more than that. It's just a little inconsistent, but these are the things that, as a pro now, I'm striving to, you know, tighten up my game on.
Yeah,
and just be more of a perfectionist.
Do you get heavy in the off season? Like, do you get like bulk up, or are you like a cleaner, leaner kind of off season?
So like, my thing was, I would always have like shredded glutes, not shredded, but I would always have like notches in my glutes in the off season.
Yeah.
And like, you could see definition everywhere. This 2 year hiatus from USA's until now was probably the chunkiest I ever got, because I don't know like where I went wrong, but you know, I looked at progress photos of myself the one day, because I don't really take a ton of photos in the off season, because I'm heavy, and you know, it's like I don't want to see all that slop. But you know, I took photos from the rear, and I'm like, dude, what happened to my glutes? Like, they're like, it's like jello back there. Yeah. So hence the prolonged diet this year. You know, I definitely had to diet down longer. I've, up until this point, I've never done longer than a 12-week diet.
What's this one? 16? Oh, well, no, you were getting ready for New York, so that doesn't really count.
Yeah, I was gonna do Indy and then maybe Cali. So I started dieting in February.
Yeah.
So I haven't eaten off plan since then. Mm-hmm. But like I said, prior to that, I hadn't done longer than 12 weeks. And when I say 12 weeks, I mean going from eating like a cheat meal every day, just into all out, balls out, strict dieting, you know, depletion. You know, I've hung in there and I feel good. And I had, you know, a little deload phase here, you know, because it was such a prolonged diet. So a couple weeks ago, I did a true deload from the gym. I increased the food. I let my body soak it up, and I really responded well. And now I feel refreshed, and I'm ready to finish this final leg of prep.
Yeah. A lot of people, well, me mainly, would say that your heavy bulk in the off season is why you put on 10 pounds of muscle. So if you didn't know, I'm a fan of extreme bulking, not extreme bulking to the point of like getting completely fat and gross.
Yeah.
But like, I'm known to get puffy, you know what I mean? Known to get a little, put on a little fluff in the off season.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to eat. You like to eat, right?
I like to eat. Yeah. What,
I mean, I've seen your like 20,000 calorie attempt. Yeah. Like, dude, that was hilarious.
I got closer than I thought. I did the math wrong. I think I got to like 17,500. So I was almost there.
God. Yeah. See, I'm not a one sitting big eater. Yeah. I can eat a lot over the course of a day, but I don't do well at buffets and stuff.
No,
I get full quick. Like, there are guys that are way smaller than me that can eat twice as much in one sitting, but maybe that's because like my meals in the off season are so large. Like, they're like 125 to 150 grams of carbs per meal.
Okay.
You know, average. Yeah. So
I was just going to ask you that. What's the standard meal look like? Like, what is a basic Zach Merkel off-season meal look like?
Standard off-season meal. I'll probably get like 75 grams of my carbs in from white rice, something complex. The other 50 to 75 is usually something simple, like bagel, English muffins, maybe some banana or some fruit or something.
Yeah.
And then chicken or fish, as you can imagine, 8 to 9 ounces of chicken or fish with some fats, like little bit of avocado or almonds or something. I'm big on red meat in the off season.
How many times a day are you doing red meat? Because I was like that when I was coming up too.
In the off season, right?
Yeah.
At least like once a day.
Once a day, right?
Yeah, I like lean ground beef or sirloin or some filet or something. Yeah. And actually on prep, I've kept a 96-4 beef meal in most of the time. So
I always felt like my performance was better if I had at least one steak meal a day. And in the off seasons for most of my career coming up, I would do 2 steak meals a day, because I always just felt like I grew better when I had red meat in my diet.
Yeah, I agree. I love red meat. I like eating lamb too. Lamb is really popular where I'm from. I mean, you have a like Assyrian heritage.
Lebanese.
That's my favorite food in the world is Lebanese food.
Lamb's really fatty though. That's the only reason.
It is. But it's so good.
So you're doing a lot of everything. I mean, you got, like you said, because a lot of the guys I've been talking to lately are doing like, if they do the 100 to 150 grams of carbs per meal, they're usually very low in fat. But you seem like you're doing the high carbs, pretty moderate fats, and, you know, 8 to 9 ounces of protein cooked is pretty significant as well. So
yeah,
just high on everything.
Just pile it on. Why not? You know?
When it comes to diet, are you switching to the traditional bodybuilding diet of like, do you do a lot of fish, or are you still leaving like the chicken and steak in? I know you said you're trying to do the beef once a day, but other than that.
Yeah. Other than that, I use chicken tenderloin and tilapia pretty much interchangeably. Okay. There's like, some people will do 2 fish meals, 2 chicken meals, 2 egg white meals, whatever.
Yeah.
My breakfast, the protein source is always just whey isolate, and I'll have like 1 whole egg. And then if there's carbs in it that day, it's like oatmeal. But yeah, I use, chicken and fish interchangeably for the other 4 or 5 meals.
Yeah.
I use avocado for my fats. If the avocados aren't ripe or whatever, I'll settle for almonds. But, you know, I really love my avocado.
It does make things easier to eat, especially you mash it into your rice.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I'll take a bite of that with like my chicken, and it just makes it much more palatable.
Yeah. What are your carbs at when you're 279 pounds? Like, what are you, or 75 pounds? Are you still like, how low are your carbs getting right now?
Obviously it varies, but right now on training days, my carbs are 200 grams, 150 grams on off days. So I think it's important for people to realize, like, I consider myself to have a pretty fast metabolism, right? Yeah. But I still need to go low on food to get stage ready. Yeah. And I think that's being lost today in bodybuilding. Like, people want to go for the coach that will give them a ton of refeeds. everyone thinks they're a Juan Morel and they can slam these all day cheat days. And that's, you know, you and I know that that's not the case when you, you know, need to get yourself right for the stage and be honest with yourself. But I've gone pretty low. Like for USAs, at the peak of my depletion, I was doing an hour and a half of cardio a day and like 60 grams of carbs a day.
Yeah. I mean, that's normal.
And I only had fats in like one or two of my meals at that point.
Yeah. I think your message is actually really good. And I don't think we talk about that enough in the podcast is you're right. I didn't even kind of clue into that until you said it, is a lot of people do think that the excess calories are okay as long as it's clean food, and everybody thinks they can get away with the Juan Morel stuff. And it's like, no, Juan's a special case.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really, really good point. I'm glad you kind of brought that up. What is training style like? Are you trained to failure, trained super heavy? I mean, I saw you doing 160 pound dumbbells for military press there. So you like, is that your thing? You like going nuts, or is that a one-off?
I like the progressive overload. But my own variation of it and, techniques that I've adopted from my coach, Morgan.
Yeah.
I think it's important to incorporate the heavy lifts when your joints feel good, when you have the capacity to handle it, top sets, back off sets. But I'm also finding that volume has its value and it has its place. I do a lot of rest pause sets, triple drop sets. I just think intensity is king.
Yeah.
And there's a number of ways to capture that, whether it's an all out top set. As long as you're like, to me, as long as you're going full range and you're not, you know, shortchanging yourself or skimping on the range of motion or anything, that's great. But then, like I said, finding other ways to, capture that intensity as you fatigue and maintain from start to finish through the workout, just firing on all cylinders, but also not overstaying your welcome and doing like five sets of whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Patrick Tour kind of stated it best, and he calls it the density of a set, meaning like how far can you take a set without actually adding more volume. Adding things like drop sets or partials or forced reps or things like that.
Yeah.
Or his favorite, I think, is cluster sets. But doing things like that actually definitely helps. But so you're not an all out like heavyweight all the time kind of guy. You're just like where it fits, that's where you use it.
Yeah. And I think different muscle groups respond better to different stimulus. Like the bigger muscle groups like back and legs, I like to, start with like the high intensity, top set, back off sets as the workout goes, maybe shift into more volume, like a 60 rep set on leg press,
60,
but like broken up into a rest pause, like 25. Oh,
15, yeah. 10, I've done that. Yeah.
Like that stuff's great. And then like, something like arms, I think they respond well, like when I just go into the gym and hit them quick and efficiently.
Yeah.
And like a 40 minute arm workout, is all you need if done properly.
Do you superset arms back and forth? Like when you're training, do you do biceps, triceps?
Yeah, I will. Like I'll do an arm workout, could be done any which way. I could alternate tricep movement, bicep movement, try by. It could be, I've done all tries and then all buys. I've done supersets.
Yeah.
And with arms, I usually do progressive sets. It's not so much top set, back off set. It's like I'll do sets of 10 to 12 or 12 to 15, gradually increasing weight until I'm on that threshold to where I'm at failure. And then once I've exhausted that movement, it's on to the next.
Yeah. So I want to touch on one more thing before we go. Are you married? Are you in a relationship or are you married?
I'm not married. I am happily in a relationship.
How long have you been with your girlfriend?
I've been dating my girlfriend Ava for about a year now, and she's wonderful. She's my training partner.
Really?
I don't know if I have any recent videos up on my Instagram. I put stories up all the time.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even notice. She's the one spotting you on the shoulder press.
Yeah.
One second here. So she's your training partner. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. 160s with your girl spotting you. That's confidence.
Yeah. And she's actually been dieting right alongside with me this whole time. She helps me prep my meals, but we do everything together. We do a lot for each other, and she's not competed yet, but mark my words, when she does, she's going to kill it in the women's physique division. Like, she's crazy strong. She has all this dense muscle. So yeah. Once she peels away the layers, she's going to be dangerous on stage.
Is your coach coaching her?
Yeah. Yeah, she just linked up with him how long ago? She's right over here.
She's here, yeah.
Do you want to say hi?
She can, yeah.
You want to say hi to Fuad?
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to the show. Is there ever any conflicts when you're both like getting ready? Or she hasn't got ready yet, but has there been any like, Zach, you're an asshole, you're dieting, you need to calm down kind of moments? Or are you guys like pretty
good? Yeah. Oh yeah, but not like nothing toxic, you know, like it's dieting's rough, you know, because you lack that, like, the ability to go out and have like a nice dinner out. And we do a lot, we get creative, you know, we come up with a lot of, you know, cool date ideas where we pack our meals and we go out for the day and enjoy ourselves.
But, like, what can you give me some ideas? Cause my fucking wife is like, we don't ever do shit. All you do is go train. And I'm like, cause my go-to is like, okay, let's go to dinner. Like, that's my go-to. Right. But like, what's a cool idea that you guys did together that I can take my wife and tell her it was my idea.
All right. Let me think.
I put you on the spot.
Because, like, food is, like...
I know.
Food is, like, it ties everything together, you know? So, it's tough. But we go to the movies a lot. We sneak in our prep meals. We'll go, like, bowling, mini golfing. Yeah. We'll go to, like an arcade, like a Dave and Buster's type.
I would do that. I don't know if my wife would be up for the arcade, but I would fucking do that for sure. That sounds like...
Yeah. Fun. Top Golf. We were gonna go to the casino just to piss around a little bit, but last night ended up just playing around on like one of those casino apps, and we had a lot of fun just at home.
So let me ask you this, and I'm asking you because me and my wife are like, we're probably best friends, like, you know, we're together all the time, we're both homebodies and shit too. So
yeah, that's us too.
Is that kind of how you guys are?
Oh yeah.
So you kind of don't hang around with a lot of other people. You have other friends, but you kind of like, you're with each other more than anything.
Absolutely. I think it's great.
I think it's important that you can actually do shit with each other that you like going to the arcade and stuff. That sounds like fun. You bring your food and all that to all these places, Tupperwares?
Yeah, I mean, we have to, you know, because you can try to eat a meal and then run out and be like, well, I got to be back in 3 hours, but you know, that never works out. Traffic. Dude,
it never, I do that all the time. I'm like, I'll shower, I'll get ready to go wherever I'm going, and then I'll have whatever meal I'm going to eat, and then I'll leave the house. Okay, I got 2 or 3 hours, and I never ever end up back. It always ruins the trip.
Yeah.
Cause the whole time I'm just trying to worry about getting back to have my next
meal. Right. And then like, you can't enjoy yourself because in the back of your mind you're like, all right, what time is it? If I hit traffic, I gotta leave in half an hour. It puts all this pressure on. So you're better off safe than sorry. Just pack your food and have it ready to go. Take some of the pressure off.
I'll take your advice from now on. I'm gonna start packing my meals.
Yeah.
Smart. All right. So Chicago, man, that's the thing. And then what's the year look like after that? Is there something after Chicago, or are you like, I just want to get one down and then shut it down?
You know what? Seeing as I've, you know, had my sights set on this show, that show, and now I finally landed on Chicago. If it's a good result at Chicago, but it's not a victory, I think I'm going to shut it down because I have been depleting and in a deficit for so long.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, mentally pretty fried. But I think if I win, that'll spark a flame and I can push, you know,
of course.
I'll be like, okay, I can push to the Olympia. You know, yeah. Some people dream about that their whole lives and never get anywhere close to it, you know? So I feel like it'd be a little disrespectful to, you know, brush that off. But I genuinely just want to bring my best to this show, see what I'm made of. That's my primary objective. And then, you know, it's like anything else. Take it one day at a time. We'll see how I feel, you know, when the dust settles.
Well, let me give you some old man advice, just in case nobody else has. I did the Olympia once. I qualified four other times. Okay.
Yeah.
I never went back after the first time.
It was the first time you qualified, and then you never went back.
Second year competing as a pro, I qualified for the Olympia, and I went to the Olympia, and then I qualified four more times after that, but never went.
Wow. So, what was your reasoning?
They're all stupid fucking reasons. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to listen. I'll be honest with you. They're looking back at them now. If somebody said to me, do you have any regrets of your bodybuilding career? It would just be that I didn't go to those qualifications. I didn't go do the, because this is the thing. It doesn't matter where you place. It does. But I mean, at the same time, when you're done your career, you can say, I could have said I did the Olympia five times. It's a nice feather to have in your cap kind of thing. Like, I'm a five-time Olympian.
Yeah.
Saying you qualified is great, but actually going and doing it is something else. So if you win, you got to fucking muster up the energy to finish the year. You can't skip it.
I'll take your advice, man.
Take my advice, trust me. But yeah. Anyway, listen, I've had a good time talking to you. I appreciate you giving us a peek into the world of Zach Merkel. How many weeks to the show now? How many weeks to Chicago?
Six out.
All right. Well, hopefully we're going to be following you along now for the next 6 weeks. And we'll keep an eye, man, and see how things go.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough for having me on, man. I feel like it's been long overdue. And I just want to give you, you know, my most sincere thank you for, you know, letting me on and letting me, you know, letting everyone into my world and see what's going on.
It's my pleasure, dude. Thank you so much. We'll keep an eye on you in the next 6 weeks, and hopefully the best happens for you, man. Get that qualification and go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Fawad. All right, I appreciate it, brother.
Okay, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good one.